let's go into something that I think is probably something we missed when we first talked. So why the hell are you trying to connect with people, and what's the plan with like kind of talking about like what we're doing with Active Health, or even with Dan with Recoup, like what our plan is, you know, like why are we doing this thing as far as importance goes?
You know, I think we all came up through school, and we all felt like the modern day chiro, like the person that most people think of when they think of a chiropractor. We felt like that average level, you know, doc could really elevate their game. And you know, the model of like having a practice within a gym or working within like a established community like that is super popularized out in the West Coast, and then it's like slowly moving along through the country. So that's like making its way even through here in Chicago. You're seeing that more and more now. And so I think all of us wanted to practice within some sort of like gym facility. All of us are pretty active. We all work out. So it only naturally made sense, and we're involved with like with the communities. You know, everybody here knows us, so it's not like we're just like bleeding this community dry. And so I think we all wanted like that average chiropractor that people think of to be a lot better. You know, to be able to take care of people's shoulder pains, their ankle pains, all sorts of things besides like neck and back pain. You know.
Yeah.
And so starting a practice within a gym for each one of us was, I think, key. And then moving forward, it's about doing really good work and then letting that kind of spread your reputation. I think, I think that's the most important thing.
So I was thinking more along the lines of like, not just like how we're establishing our practices, but why we're doing this podcast and why we're going out and teaching. And it's just, I was going to go along more along the lines of educating people, and not just educating the public, but actually educating professions and trying to raise that standard, like what you talked about before, like where we see chiropractors who claim that they're some sort of sports therapist or whatever, but yet they don't know how to diagnose and they don't know what's called for, like let's say with a standard like hamstring strain, like how would you manage that? Like what's the management like? You know that it's a hamstring strain, but what are you gonna do? You're gonna do ART to it? You're gonna try to do myofascial release to it? Are you gonna try to needle it? Like what would be a better protocol? And usually if you have a stretch injury, stretching it more is probably gonna suck. And it's funny to think about, but most people don't know that. And also practitioners tend to continue along the lines of, it hurts, let's stretch it. And we wanna raise the bar.
Definitely, I agree. I think, what we do here one-on-one with a patient, you know, we've extended it out to doing like our small little mobility clinics within the gym, mm-hmm. where you have like members that are already, you know, part of the gym community come in, they want to learn a little bit more. So now you can kind of reach some more people. Then we've both done like seminars in the gym that also invite people from outside the gym, you know, and so it's a little bit of a bigger crowd. The whole point of all of it is to have an extension of your everyday practice into the real world, you know, and reach as many people as possible. That's the main reason why I have an online, you know, presence, why I even do things online, why I have an online membership where I do like mobility stuff. It's just so that you can reach more people with what I think is like the best way to take care of your body. You know, and
planning on longevity.
What we know, you know, now. And so I think reaching as many people as possible is the goal. I think all of us love teaching naturally, but there's always a stigma towards like, oh, those who can't do teach, or you know, you see that some of the teachers that aren't inspiring coming up through, whether it's through high school, college, graduate school, whatever. You see people that, you know, don't inspire you a lot more than people that like really inspire you. And I think all of us are super passionate about what we do. And so anytime you are teaching people that are already interested in things that are related to what you do, it's kind of like a symbiotic relationship. Both people want to do what the other is going to do. And so,
Yeah. Well, kind of piggybacking off of that, I think that you brought up a good point. Those that can't do teach, that classic saying. But from our standpoint, when it comes to the clinical application, clinical experience, and just as far as skills as a practitioner goes, I feel like we all render pretty darn good results, which is why our reputation continues to grow, and also our practices continue to grow, and people want to continue to learn from us because we're doing something right. And I kind of pride ourselves, like whenever I refer someone to go see you in Chicago, I know they're going to get awesome care. When I go refer someone to go see Dan in Victoria, they're going to get great care. If they go see Chris in Reno, they're going to love them. You know, it's just continuous network building, but also having faith in practitioners to be able to do their job at a very, very high capacity. And something that we are passionate about is teaching, you know, not just the average person that wants to learn how to move better, but also teaching practitioners how to work at a higher standard and get better results. You know, so the end goal, for at least for me, is to be able to say, hey, we do these things, we have the backing for it, and let's show you how we do things and maybe give you a different outlook as to how you should approach a certain clinical presentation. For the people that are, you know, sports therapists, chiros, PTs, whatever that we allow into the game.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. I think we were lucky. You know, we learned from like some really good doctors.
Yeah.
And so I think it's only natural to want to pass as much of that experience, where it's, you know, packaged experience with knowledge is what wisdom is. You know, so they combine this 30 years of experience with all of their knowledge of anatomy and physiology, and they teach us, you know, in multiple seminars over multiple years. And so then we digest that same information with our clinical experience, with our background, through different seminars, and then you just package that as wisdom towards the next, you know, generation of up and coming, whether it's, and not just, you know, therapists or practitioners, but just people that are out there in front of regular folks.
Yeah.
You know, whether you're a coach, whether you're a trainer, just being armed with a lot more information on how things work, you're only gonna help your clients.
Yeah, and I, you know, I kind of...
That's the game, is to answer as many as possible.
Yeah, and I kind of look at that, you know, like people are afraid. We touched on this last time we talked. People are afraid to lose a client. They think that they're losing somebody when they're not with them. But really, you're taking a step back and doing what's right for the person in front of you. So like, let's say it's a personal trainer who has a client who's always experiencing nagging shoulder pain. And it's like, oh, well, I can't bench press today again for the, you know, seventh week in a row because my shoulder hurts every time we do it, or it's hurting right now. And it's like, okay, well, what's this personal trainer need to do? Hey, I've got a great person that you should go see. This is their name. This is their contact. I trust them that they're going to do a good job to take care of this issue so we can get you back to doing some bench, because your goals are to have a solid chest for, you know, beach day this summer. Whatever it is, it doesn't matter. But, and then if they come and see, let's say me, and I'm like, oh man, this is a little bit out of my scope of practice, or we've been doing a nice trial of therapy and you haven't done well, we need to take the next step. You need to go see one that's even smarter than me. And I would refer them to an ortho or something like that, and so on and so forth. It's just, but it's also just doing the right thing for that person. Just because your shoulder hurts doesn't mean you can't train. It just means maybe we need to take a break and try some things that are a little bit better for it. But doing the thing that's right for the person in front of you is very important. And also staying in your lane in some sort of fashion is even more important. Not trying to be the hero all the time. And being like, oh, well, I saw this one stretch on Instagram that helped somebody on for their shoulder, so let's try that with you. This is stupid.
I love the relationships I have, trainers and coaches that I work with, where we work together on a client or, you know, one of my patients. It's the best because the person feels super well taken care of. Now they have this like team that's behind them that's managing whatever's going on. I work with a lot of the Olympic weightlifters here, and so their coaches will, before they start their next cycle, we come sit down together, like, hey, what's the best strategy moving forward over the next 4, 6, 8 weeks or whatever. we have, the only way, reason we do this is because we have the best intentions of the client in mind. That's the whole goal.
Yeah, absolutely. Like when I was with St. Mary's, I learned quite a bit that, you know, when you're working with, let's say, just we'll generalize everybody as an athlete, and they have this team of a chiropractor, a PT, an ATC, and an MD who all come together, collaborate, and figure out what's the best course of action for this person who's experiencing this discomfort in order to get them back to the activity that we need them to do. And so, you know, bringing that approach into a private practice setting, I think is, you know, invaluable. It's just ridiculous how helpful that is. Like for me, the relationships I have inside my gym, you know, there's like, what, 25 to 30 trainers in here. When they refer me a client, I assess, I figure some things out. I find some sticky ranges of motion that I want to see improve. I give them a plan, and then I sit down with that personal trainer and I say, hey, this is what I found. This is what we're dealing with. Here's the things they need to be doing. Let's implement that into the training so that this person continues to get well.
Precisely.
And if they follow suit, you get good results. And now you're a part of the team.
Yeah. You know, very quickly. Yeah. Especially when, you know, it all works so well together.
So what's your, Demir, tell people about what you like to do as far as fitness goes so they get a little background as to, you know, who you are outside of your clinic.
You know, I try to vary it up. I have ADD, I feel like, when it comes to both interests and physical, you know, endeavors. So I run probably 2-3 times a week. I weightlift 2-3 times a week. I'll jump in a CrossFit class maybe once a week. And then I'll do jiu-jitsu 3 to 4 days a week. I've been doing that consistently for 5-6 years.
What's your belt?
I like to keep it active, man. I think doing like my mobility stuff doing a very consistent mobility routine the last 2.5 years, I found that I'm a better athlete now than I was 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And so I can do a lot more things now that I couldn't back in my 20s. I just don't recover as quickly, I guess. But I feel a lot more athletic. And so that's why running is not painful now, which is awesome. So I'm going to do a half K next month.
Awesome.
Or a half marathon.
Yeah. A half K sounds good to me. That's all you'll see me around these days.
Yeah. But mainly, I mainly do jiu-jitsu. And so all the things that I do physically, I like to, so that it complements my jiu-jitsu training. So I don't do a lot of heavy, slow lifting or anything like that. You know, I try to keep my cardio up and I try to keep mobile.
Yep.
And then try to keep really functionally strong. That's, awesome. I think, what works best for what I like to do.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right on. What's your belt?
Purple belt, baby.
Dang. Means you could choke a couple people.
Yeah. That also means I've been choked a lot.
Yeah. That's funny. That's so great. So with our little mini seminar series that we held over here in Scottsdale, what would you like to see come out of that? What do you think from your end, your perspective? Because we haven't even gone over that between you, me, and Dan with what we went over.
Nope.
So tell me, give me some insight.
The whole weekend. You know, I think starting out, doing that thing, whether it's once or twice a year, is going to be, I think, probably the most feasible.
Mm-hmm.
And the most fun. You know, I feel like if we try to commit to doing like 6 a year, all of a sudden it's like work.
Yeah.
And I think having one really or two really good shows, you know, products, weekends a year is going to be plenty. Now, I think the other thing that we should really sit down and focus on is what we're really trying to do with this thing. Like, what are we trying to really get out of, besides just, you know, spreading the word, trying to get as many people educated on things that we know as possible, and, you know, learn new things while we do research for all this stuff.
Yep.
I just think sitting down and, like, really, like, focusing, that is going to result in a better weekend, I think. I think we had a great weekend. We had a lot of positive positive reviews, and it was a lot of fun. But I, you know, I think deep down inside, we all know, like, we could do so much better.
Yeah.
So much better.
We're always hard on each other, though, so.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's what it is. Is really hard on each other.
I would say that as far as, like, I mean, because think about this. We've been talking about doing something like this since pretty much our hot tub days when we were at Palmer. And you know, it finally came to after some really solid planning and execution. But, you know, I think that when we were in school and, you know, after probably about 15 to 20 beers each in a hot tub, in the Pines, you know, hot tub, I think that what we came up with originally was like pretty robust, you know, like as far as change goes, for the fitness community, as far as change goes for, the standard of care. And as far as change goes for the general population's perception as to how their body works, when they need to see somebody, and what to do. And yeah. I think that when it comes down to it, the one word, or the two words, is empowerment and education.
Yeah.
It's giving people the tools to know that they can have certain things be longevity in their life, like as far as training goes or stretching or whatever it is that they enjoy. But understanding that if this is what you want to do for a very long extended period of time, these are the steps you need to take in order to get there and sustain it. If you don't, high likelihood, you're going to be that person that's 50, 60 years old saying, oh, back when I was in my 20s, I used to do that shit. And now look at me. And it's like, well, yeah, you did things pretty shitty. Yeah. You know, like you didn't do all the things that you needed to do in order to keep going. And
the edge for 20 years.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, fuck that. I don't want to be 70 years old and, you know, sitting in my chair and reminiscing on things that I used to be able to do. I want to be 70 years old, still doing the things that I did when I was 30, but just at a different capacity. You know, yeah. It's like, I'm not super strong. My max deadlift is 365, you know, like, and that was on a, you know, the moons were in the perfect place for me to have that pull. But when I'm 70, yeah, hell yeah, you better believe I'm going to try to deadlift. It might not be from the same range of motion, might not be the same weight, but I'm still going to deadlift because I know it's good for my body. And I'm, you know, constantly working on position to make sure I sustain it. And I want people to do that too, if, you know, deadlifting's important to them. If it's not, right, then fuck it, whatever, no big deal.
I saw a video the other day of two guys rolling jiu-jitsu. One was like 67 years old, the other one was 83 years old.
It's awesome. Hell yeah.
It's like, bam, right there.
Yeah, shoot, you know, it's funny. I think about, you know, my grandmother, right? She's 95 years old. And up until the point that she broke her hip, which was 3 years ago or 2 years ago, you know, from 70 to 90, she was in a freaking dance class 4 or 5 days a week, dancing,
yeah.
Ballroom dancing.
That's awesome.
It's freaking awesome. And she's healthy. She's freaking healthy. You know, and she was always moving. And she'll tell you that dancing is what keeps her alive. And that's her choice. You know, that's what she wants to do. It's an activity. And that's fucking badass. You know, my grandma's a little G.
Yeah. It's been 90.
Yeah, and like, you know, when you break your hip past the age of 75 or 80, that's a fucking death sentence. Most people die within a year.
Yeah.
She broke her hip 2 years ago, 3 years ago. Yeah. And she's kicking. She's kicking ass.
That's great. Yeah, I know. I look at, you know, some of my relatives are aging. And you want to just do better.
Yeah.
You know? And so if you have the knowledge, why not do it? You know?
Yeah. And a little shout out to chiropractic. My grandmother was the wife of a chiro. So
it's the only reason.
Yeah, well adjusted up until her 70s when my grandfather passed away. But yeah, shoot. Who knows? Could have helped a lot. How about this, Demir? Why don't you tell us, let's go back to school a little bit, because you said we learned from really good professors and you learned from some cool people. So who do you feel like you learned the most from? What stuck with you and how you practice that today?
Well, I think, you know, coming up through school, we had, you know, Dr. Souza. He was really instrumental in kind of setting the bar. I mean, the guy's textbook is in every chiropractic school, you know, and he teaches in our school.
And physical therapy schools.
And so that guy kind of set the bar on, like, oh, man, this guy is somebody really, really, really smart. Like, A, I have to be up there with him in order to even, like, communicate with him. And B, I can't disappoint this guy coming out of his school. I can't be, you know, a failure. So there's guys like that, academically speaking. Like, you know, Meeker wasn't a clinician. He's the head of the school. But ultimately, like, within the profession, the guy's a pretty big influence. And then, you know, we'd have throughout the adjusting classes, you know, Dr. Snow, Scott Snow.
Yep. Bro Snow.
To be specific, was a really big influence in terms of, you know, the manual adjusting. Outside of school, obviously Dr. Dan McClure was the biggest influence in terms of full body adjusting. We only took his seminar like 95 times or something.
You were at every single one.
It was a lot. He would come in and do these seminars and just get 30, 40 students in a hotel conference room, and we would just spend 8 hours adjusting every single body joint and just going over and over and over. And so that's one of the ways you can just get a lot better. And then outside of the school, you know, we guys like Moreau, you know, out in USOC, the head of the USOC medical team is a chiropractor. That's a big deal. So, like, you got to be able to communicate with guys that and gals at that level. You know, you got to be good. You got to up your game. And so there's a lot of influences coming through school. Lecoq, I mean, for Christ's sake, you know, yeah, huge influence. I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, like, you know.
He was one of my best classes.
Yeah. It's funny because, like, you know, I like school, you people talk like, ah, oh, fucking Palmer, that place sucked, this and that. It's like, yeah, you know, when you're in it, it's kind of annoying. When you look back, you get pretty jaded and annoyed with it. But man, you wouldn't be where you were. You wouldn't be where you are now without those people that taught you. So like, I kind of look back, I think about Souza for sure. You know, as far as differential diagnosis goes, it's like, man, that guy knows some things. I'm learning from him as often as possible. Anytime he puts something out that's new, I'm on it. And I want to read it, and I want to practice the way that he practices or would be a clinician. And then, you know, Bro Snow was great as far as manipulation goes in school. But, you know, I feel like Coop.
Yeah.
Although he was he was awesome. I mean, I got along great with Coop. And I think it was that dry Jewish humor that we both have and the love for music. But I feel like I connected with him pretty well. And I really just, the understandings of the biomechanics of the pelvis and the low back was just ridiculous. And the one thing that I feel like that we learned from him that really stuck with us, truly stuck with us, is he was the guy that told us, be careful who you learn from. Because, and to me was just like, at the time you're like, ah, yeah, for sure. Because I'm pretty sure we had just heard some whack job say some stuff at Palmer Homecoming, and we're like, what the fuck was that? And then that's when he came up to us and said, be careful who you learn from, and he was talking shit to them as they were presenting, which was awesome.
I remember that speech, and I know the guy you're talking about.
Yeah.
To add on to that, you know, I think one of the most important classes that you take coming up through school is that evidence-based medicine class that everybody hated. You know, people hated it because it was boring and it wasn't, you know, informative.
Yeah.
But it kind of taught you how to, you know, critically think your way through a lot of research and break it down and be able to digest information. And the amount of information I have to correct within my office about what people have Googled is, you know, alarmingly high. Mm-hmm. And that's a lot of it has to do with people's Google skills aren't that good. You know, it's the same thing with a lot of clinicians don't have good research reading comprehension skills.
Yeah.
And that class was really good at establishing that, or getting you start the process of thinking about how to analytically go through that stuff.
Yeah, I know. It's like, well, Morgan Young was our teacher for that, and he was a stud with it. He was kind of, you know, it's funny because like we look, you know, there's that little Facebook group or whatever when everybody's like trying to look for, you know, oh, does anybody have good research on this? And it's like, it's like, shit, man, you know, like Morgan Young is rolling over in his grave. He's not dead. He's alive. But that poor guy is probably looking at that like, God, you learned nothing. You know, it's like, and that's, you know, that's a small percentage. It's not a lot of people, but, you know, and that's one thing we want to clean up in our community is like, shoot, if I got 20 chiros that are near me that aren't up on evidence or at least like practice what we would consider to be a standard of care or what the board would consider to be a standard of care, it's like, shit, man, up the game. Stop making us look bad because people don't trust me because they don't trust a guy down the street, which is stupid.
Exactly.
It doesn't make any sense.
Not all you guys are the same.
Yeah. And it's like, you don't have to practice like me, but shit, you know, don't make me look bad.
And just do what is best for the person based on like true evidence of what we know is best. That's it.
Yeah.
It's pretty simple.
Yeah. Who are you learning from right now?
You know, I learned a lot from Shivers and Spina over at Functional Anatomy Seminars. You know, I've kind of latched on a lot of what they're thinking has been the last 4 years probably within practice. Talk about, you know, digesting the newest evidence and then just kind of formulating a thought process out of the whole situation. I think that system is by far ahead of almost anything that's out there.
Yep.
And so, you know, I've been just taking a couple of those every year and then continuing to digest that system. So like FRC, pin stretch, you know, functional range release, all these things kind of flow together and are just come from the same thing. And so every time you take a class or a seminar with them, you just kind of like review stuff that you've already been exposed to, but you just keep peeling away new layers of info. It's really cool.
It's awesome.
And so I think they're like new clinicians where I look at them like, man, that there's just another level. And so how can I get to that level someday? And so I recommend their stuff definitely for everybody.
Yeah, I've been diving back into some slick Stewie McGill stuff. I got his book, the third edition of Low Back Disorders, just to go back and refresh a little bit after, you know, we had done that Perform Better seminar and learned a little bit from him. And yeah, just been approaching some low back cases that sometimes I would do certain types of therapies depending on how they present. But then it's like, okay, well, after these tests, you know, this guy gets really good results and he tends to talk a lot about this X, Y, and Z. We're going to get after that. And as far as assessment goes, even it's like, you know, you forget, like after we've been in practice for a little bit, you hear a person's history. It's like, man, the history just tells you so much. And he really hones in on skilled history taking. And so I feel like I kind of revamp the way I ask questions and the way that flow goes when someone comes in and I say, okay, well, what about, okay, tell me about what you're experiencing. And I hear their story. And when they say something that triggers me to ask a next question, it comes to my mind and I do it. And and that leads me down my path of what kind of clinical decision am I going to have to make, or what kind of clinical test am I going to have to do to make sure I could rule this in or rule this out so I could help this person even better.
Yeah, he's one of the best ever.
Oh, he's unreal.
Shit, a beard of him. That was the coolest day of my life.
Yeah.
Hey, I gotta run.
Okay. All right, dude. Good.
This was
all right. Go take care of people. Nice chatting with you. Talk to you soon.
Yeah, man.
All right, hope you guys enjoyed that. If you want to continue to see what Demir is doing over there in Chicago, give him a follow on Instagram at ActiveHealthChicago. And if you want to hear what I'm doing, to see what I'm doing on Instagram at ActiveHealth_Scottsdale. We look forward to putting out some more podcasts for you guys and interviewing some fun people along the way. If you have any questions or topics that you guys want to hear, go ahead and shoot us a message and let us know what you want to hear us talk about. This is for you and for us to give you some input and education on that stuff. And so Please like and subscribe, do all that fun stuff, leave us a little review, and we'll see you in the future.